You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. I'm very happy now to welcome Eric Witt. He is executive director of the Santa Fe Film Office. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. I prefer the title Staff Weasel, but we'll go with Executive Director for now.
All right, then. Now, you've been involved in the film industry for a very long time, both in Los Angeles and here in New Mexico, where you were basically the guy who started the Film Incentive Program. And I was reading the governor of New Mexico wrote a piece the other day in the Santa Fe New Mexican, which felt like she was kind of like taking responsibility and really credit for the success of the New Mexico Film Program, which I remember when she was first running for governor in 2010, she was really critical of the film industry and was talking about capping it and wanting to scale it back and things like that. But anyway, you were instrumental in starting the Film Incentive Program in New Mexico during a time when there weren't a lot of film incentive programs nationally.
We were actually the very first one to have a viable, scaled incentive program. Some other states had very small targeted incentive programs that were limited to, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars a year or certain types of production. We were the very first ones to create kind of a pan-industry applicable incentive that was intended to build a brand new industry in the state of New Mexico. I grew up here. As you mentioned, I spent many years out in LA. I've been in the film business now for, 30 years. Hate to admit it. But it always struck me as a place, you know, we always had a film industry in New Mexico. One of the very first, I think the very first commercial film ever made, Indian Day School, was shot here in 1898, I believe, by Thomas Edison's. So commercial film production has been going on in New Mexico longer than anywhere else on planet Earth. But it was always sporadic. You know, it depended on genre taste, you know, particularly Western. You know, everybody knew we were known for Westerns back in the day, the old Tom Mix films that were all shot out in Las Vegas, John Wayne films. Then we got some science fiction stuff coming in, particularly with the advent of the atomic age and, you know, shooting down south. The cowboy stuff, the science fiction, those are all cyclical, but we had never actually built up an industry here. And it always struck me that New Mexico was a perfect place to make movies. You know, the company I was with, we shot films literally all around the world, north, south, east, and west. You know, we were making films in Morocco, and we were making films in other places, and we're based in Rome and L.A. And I'd say, why aren't we shooting these in New Mexico? It's, 8,000 miles closer than having to go to Morocco. And at that time, your listeners may recall Canada was coming on. There were a lot of countries that were vying to take production out of Hollywood, what they called runaway production. And we were shooting in Canada. We were shooting New Zealand. Ireland was coming big on. That was when the Celtic Tiger phenomenon was going on. And it just seemed to me that if we could, and they were all using incentives to get production over there, if we could make it worth the state's while, make it work financially, fiscally for the state, and give productions that were already leaving Hollywood a chance to stay in the United States, it would be very attractive to them. And it turned out to be. So anyway, long story short, you mentioned we were one of the first. By the time I worked for the Richardson administration all 8 years, by the time we left office 8 years later, 43 other states had incentive programs. Not all as well constructed as ours. I'm not touting our own horn, but my specialty was film finance. So, you know, we kind of knew how to put together a program that made sense fiscally, as well as from a producer's perspective, fiscally from a taxpayer point of view. And then we were off to the races, you know, and that was it.
And it's a very important industry because New Mexico, for various reasons, including our population and geography, doesn't have all that many different industry sectors that it can tap into for economic development.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that. The film was one of five or six targeted economic development sectors that we had identified where we had an opportunity to compete on a truly world-class level, because so much of the industry now, there are a few localized industries. Renewable energy and alternative energy is something that tends to be a little more localized or limited to your distribution networks that you have. But we went after renewable alternative energy. We went after aerospace industry. We went after some biotech, obviously tourism. We went after some advanced battery technology, and we identified film and media industries as something that was a good fit for the state. Because you're exactly right. We're not a California, we're not a New York, we're not a Texas, where we have unlimited opportunities to really compete on a global level like we have been successful in film. Another really important element of the film incentive, or the film program overall, is everybody focuses on the incentives. That was really only the tip of the iceberg. We spent at least as much time and money building up our training programs, our business education programs, attracting private capital investment to build sound stages and other physical infrastructure. All of those things are necessary to actually create an industry here where you can then hire local people, hire local businesses, which means you capture all that money into the economy, you create local jobs. And by creating those local jobs and capturing that new money in the economy, because the vast majority of it comes in from out of state, that's where you start generating the appropriate tax revenues to then pay for the incentive program. And that's what really distinguishes New Mexico's program from others. They only did the incentive part. They didn't do the other parts.
Right.
And so they're super less efficient than what New Mexico's was, and hopefully will return to be. You mentioned the governor's op-ed piece this past Sunday. And I was like, okay, whatever.
What do you mean?
It was rather revisionist history. What they didn't mention in that piece, and I say this not politically, just administratively and objectively, is that they really broke the program when they first came in. You know, they're touting, oh, we had $500 million in production last year. You know, this is great. Well, essentially, all they've done is to return to the high water marks that had been established when they entered office. They lost about 60-70% of the business when they came in because, unfortunately, of, you know, politically motivated attacks, and that's just the way it is. They also super complicated the program. We had one of the most easily understandable, accessible, and administratable programs in the world. We were called the gold standard by a number of publications, business publications, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, United States, and of all places, Xinhua, the official government media outlet in China. So when you have the communists and the capitalists both praising your system, something must have been going right.
What was going right? In other words, how did it work? And how does it work now?
It's pretty simple. You know, you have it used to be pretty simple. Now it's way more complicated. The basic calculus was that for every dollar that's spent on production in New Mexico, and if we can capture that money in the local economy, the state will make between 23 and about 32 cents on the dollar in terms of taxes, personal income tax, gross receipts tax, corporate income tax, leases and fees. That's just to the government coffers. So if we do a rebate, we started off at 20. It's now gone up to 25 or 30, depending on thereabouts. But if you're making 25 cents on the dollar and you're given 25 cents back, then it's a wash. It doesn't cost the state anything. And that other 75 cents is now new money generated into the local private sector economy that creates all those jobs. And then in addition, helps to get people, not only diversifies the economy like we all want to, but gets a lot of people off public assistance. You know, if you're spending on average, you know, let's just say 20 grand a year on people who are on public assistance, and, you know, you get 1,000 of those people off working now in the film business, there's $20 million savings to the state.
And have you seen that happen? People who are on public assistance going into
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that happens. That was one of the most gratifying parts of the job, was going to visit sets and literally having these big, you know, hulking, dirty, sweaty film crew people come up and just in tears in their eyes and give you a hug and saying, thank you. You know, I was able to rent, you know, we got an apartment, you know, my daughter now, we live in a cool place, we have health insurance. Yeah.
Because they're working as crew.
They're working as crew, or they're working for businesses that are supplying the industry that may not be film businesses per se, but, you know, paint supply, all the suppliers that we have talked about in the past. So in a nutshell, that's how our program is designed to work. You don't get the rebate until you've already spent your money, paid all your taxes, paid all the fees. So unlike other economic development incentive programs that we run at the state, and I was involved with a lot of those in the governor's office as well. Everyone thinks of me as, you know, film guy, but the portfolio was much more broad than that. It's not a bet on the come thing where we say, okay, here's company X, here's $10 million in capital outlay to help you build your factory or whatever, and we hope we get the results that you say you're going to give us. No, film is exactly the opposite. You've got to spend the money first. You've got to hire the people first. You've got to engage in the production activity before you get any kind of incentive. So, you know, that's pretty much it. Now, unfortunately, the program has become much more complicated. In 2011, they instituted a number of changes, including putting this so-called cap on the program, where you can still earn as many credits in a given year. There's no limit on that in aggregate for the industry, but they'll only pay out $50 million per year. And any excess earned beyond that $50 million gets carried over into future years and has to be paid back in the future. And so that's one of the problems we're facing right now, in addition to the vast complexity, increased complexity of our program, to the point where if you just try to read the statute now, even I, having written the very first one, I can't even understand what the heck it says. You literally need a flow chart, you know, like, I mean, we have them posted on our website. Go to sffo.film and you can see the charts. Just to understand the different kinds of, you know, what you have to do to qualify for this, for that, blah, blah, blah. So in addition to the complexity of the program, because production has come back to those high watermarks, they're earning more per year in credits, accruing more per year than the state pays out. And so there's a backlog that's been built up over the last 3 years of between $150 and $200 plus million dollars in credits that are owed on production that's already taken place in the past.
So basically, film production companies are owed money.
Yes.
By the state of New Mexico.
Correct. It's sovereign debt by the state of New Mexico, yeah.
Which has said, we're only going to pay out so much per year. Is that a disincentive?
Yeah.
For...
yeah, it is. Particularly for smaller independent films that need their money back right away. Or for the big blockbuster, what they call tentpole films in the industry, the big summer movies that we used to make here, like the Avengers of the World, Terminators, Transformers, those kind of big monsters that are earning $15-20 million in credits per film. But that's how much they pay into state revenues anyway. That is an issue the next administration is going to have to reckon with. Is they need to do something to clean out that backlog, because it's hindering the expansion of the program. What the governor didn't mention in her op-ed piece is that even though we've gotten back to levels that we were at before, what's happened this last 8 years is it allowed our competition to catch up greatly and overcome serious barriers to entry and competitive advantages that we had established here in the state of New Mexico. And we kind of gave all that stuff away.
Who are our competitors?
Our biggest competitors in the United States right now, other than California and New York, obviously, our biggest competitor is the state of Georgia. And then overseas, it's the UK. The state of Georgia in 2011 was doing probably 70, 80 million in production. They were the little dog on the porch. But when our program went down, to their credit, Georgia jumped right on our growth trajectory, went super aggressively after it. We did $500 million in production a couple years ago. They did $3.2 billion. And that was the growth trajectory that we were on. And that is unfortunately what was sacrificed by really screwing with the program, you know, back in the day. And again, it's not, you know, I don't mean it to be a political critique, because it's not that, but those are just the empirical facts on the ground. I mean, they really did a number on it. And that's every year, you know. And that was our projected growth curve that we were on. So when I tell people, if we can fix our program now, we could double production in 16 months pretty easily, triple it in 24 to 36, you know, for sure. Because, again, that's the kind of scale that we were aiming for to begin with.
So now that there's more competition, because there are other states as well. I know Louisiana had a program, and it seems like other rural states, kind of big states that aren't necessarily the highest income states, are attractive for the film industry. Can we kind of, like, what makes you think now that there's this other competition that we can get back to where we were
because
and grow?
Now it gets back to our strategy of it's not just the incentive. You know, you don't shoot an incentive, you shoot a film. And all of those other elements that we spent so much time and effort developing, the crew base, the infrastructure, the business support base, all make it super attractive to come back to New Mexico just from an operation logistical point of view. You couple that with the tremendous topography, variety of topography that we have in the state, urban, rural, mountain, you know, every major climatic zone, I think, except for an ocean and tropical rainforest, you know, we pretty much have going for us here in New Mexico, and our proximity to LA.
Right.
All of those things translate both creatively but also financially to the bottom line. This is why we thought this industry would be a good fit for the state of New Mexico. We didn't go after aerospace and film because we wanted to make movies on Mars. You know, these were things that made sense for us analytically to do. And then I mentioned a lot of those other states, they offer attractive incentive programs from the perspective of the production company. But if they're not recouping their money, if they don't have that underlying support infrastructure with which to capture jobs and the money in the local economy, then it's not such an attractive program from a taxpayer perspective. And that's the balance. And I've consulted with a number of states and other countries on, you know, every program needs to be different. You need to tailor it to your particular tax structure, to what you've got available. You can't just copy New Mexico's program and plop it down in Texas. They don't have the same tax. It's not going to work.
How much New Mexico labor is employed? I mean, you talked about people getting off public assistance, but there's also a lot of people, actors and so on, brought in from out of state for some of these LA or New York based productions.
Some of them. Though incentives on those people that are brought in from out of state, they either don't get them or they're very limited in New Mexico. So again, unlike some other states that have no limits on what they call above the line, which is the talent, the writers, directors, actors, editors, cinematographers, et cetera. We limit that in New Mexico. You can't have unlimited. We do not limit resident crew. Our incentives are very, very, very targeted toward using New Mexico residents, either crew or talent or businesses. And there are limited exceptions for what you can bring in from out of state. In terms of the number of people employed in the industry, I'd say probably about 6,000-7,000, I believe, directly employed between crew, actors, you know, other people. And then another similar amount, 6,000 or 7,000, employed what they call indirectly. So additional employees they've had to hire at the local hardware store because they're selling $200,000 worth of lumber to, you know, Production X. You know, people who do dog sitting, dog walk. I know you're a big dog fan, you know, so that you laugh, but that's an actual, there's a high demand for that within the film industry.
People going to restaurants. I met somebody after a yoga class who was on one of the film crews and was taking yoga to stay in shape.
Exactly. So stuff like that, you know, you gotta bring on additional people on staff. So between the two, it's estimated between 12 and 14,000 people, let's say, work in the film industry in the state of New Mexico.
Which is a significant number of people in a state this small.
Yeah, yeah. It has become a measurable and significant part of the state's base economy. And again, if we play our cards right, there are some national and global forces that I think are going to be driving production back towards New Mexico. I mentioned that we lost a lot of it, but I think we're going to have that rarest of chances in politics, which is a second opportunity, a second chance. And if we position ourselves right, fix what we need to fix in our program, and clean out some of that backlog, as I mentioned, on past due credits or accrued credits, we can essentially determine what the limit of the growth we want is in the industry. I mean, if people are happy with it being at $500 million, okay. But since everyone's crying about how we need to diversify our economy and blah, 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 and this and that, this is a sector of the economy that's already established and poised to grow at whatever rate we would like to essentially set it at ourselves.
The majority of film and TV and so on productions that we're talking about here that are part of the film incentive program come from out of state, but there's also some that are locally produced. What does that balance look like?
More and more we're seeing local production, which was always the intent that we had. I mentioned that as part of our training program, we didn't just do crew training. We also had programs specifically designed to support local filmmakers. So we had the New Mexico Filmmakers Program. We had the Hispanic Filmmakers Program, Native American Filmmakers Program, the New Visions New Mexico, essentially grant program. It was structured. They aren't grants per se, but that would convey up to $20,000 per production to local productions, you know, that were wanting to make films. in return for them training local crew, using local crew to train on the production. We had a number of those. We started above the line filmmaking programs at our state colleges and universities around New Mexico. And it was all tailored toward what their specific strength was. So Eastern had a great news production and media production program. New Mexico State, a much more traditional straight-up film school at their operation down there. UNM, much more focused towards digital production, computer-generated production. Western New Mexico, animation, because they have the Bakshi School of Animation down in Silver City, which is a tremendous little jewel that very few people know about. So all of those different things were intended to generate locally originated production for two reasons. One, because we're doing this program for our people to create jobs in our economy. We're not doing it for Hollywood. But two, we had anticipated that if we were successful, our incentive program would be replicated by other states. And so competition would increase for films coming out of Hollywood, right, or coming out of New York. And so to mitigate that competition, the more we could do New Mexico-generated content and not have to rely on competing for everything coming in from out of state, strictly from a competition perspective. Again, another strategic decision that we made to pursue.
I would just like to step back for a moment and point out that this is your government at work making the economy work better. I mean, when people are reflexively anti-government, it's like, no, let's look at which programs are actually working. And it's also sort of weirdly an example of where trickle-down actually does work. You get money coming into the economy, and then it trickles into all sorts of other areas of the economy. So it's just, I think it's important to take a kind of meta perspective on this.
Yeah, if you structure these programs right, and one of the hallmarks of the success of the program, we've been focusing mostly on what we did on the government side of this, but one of the hallmarks of our success was that it really was a partnership with private industry, with labor, with government, with, you know, the overall business community, the educational community, all of that coming together, seeing a common interest at the end, how it could benefit so many of these various sectors. Another reason that we went after the industry too is that the benefits of this business and the areas it touches are not narrowly focused at all. They're very broadly based in the general economy and then in the social fabric overall. It wouldn't have happened if we did not, if it was just the government going out there and doing it, it wouldn't have happened. But if government hadn't taken the leadership position that it did and really drive this, then it would never have gotten started before. It hadn't happened before. This was something that essentially created a new modern era of film production in the state of New Mexico.
One of the things that's so interesting to me is that television is having a golden age right now. And of course, everybody knows about New Mexico and Breaking Bad, and that was multiple seasons of a show. So that was year after year of that money coming into the economy and that show being produced. What are we seeing in terms of film and TV? Is TV an ever-increasing part of the New Mexico film business?
We've had more TV as a percentage of production lately because in 2013, to save the industry, essentially, from what I said they did in 2011, they passed what was called, the euphemistically referred to as the Breaking Bad Bill, again, based on the popularity of that series, which added an additional 5% incentive kicker to the production of series television. So whereas the base rate for feature film production in New Mexico is 25%, if you do series TV, not movies of the week, but series television, it's 30%. And so as a result of that, we have seen more TV production coming in. I'm a little ambivalent about having to go to 30%. I think we're getting to, you know, we're pushing the bounds of break even right there. But
that's a new show, Breaking Bad, but Breaking Even.
Breaking Even, right. Yeah, a show about government incentives. That'll get tons of viewership. It was the ante we had to put in to get back in the game. You know, a lot of people thought by 2012 that New Mexico just rolled up the carpet on its film production. For all intents and purposes, it kind of had. But in order to revive it, the state passed this extra thing. So, you know, we have the sequel now, or prequel, to Breaking Bad, the Better Call Saul series that's here. We had Longmire here for a long time. Night Shift was here for a long time, many multiple seasons. Roswell is a brand new series that just started up here in Santa Fe itself, hoping for a multi-season, multi-year run. Why those are good? Those are good for two reasons, series television. A, because as you said, it's long-term production. You know, they're not here for 4 or 5 months. They're here for 4 or 5 years, ideally. So it really stabilizes the production base. But two, it also provides a great platform for training up-and-coming crew members. You know, we used a lot of those series TV productions that were going on back in the day to really mentor on-site graduates from our crew training program. So, but you need the overall mix. You know, the flip side of that is long-term production tends to employ local crew, which live in their own houses. Talent that comes in and is here, they tend to rent or buy places. So they're not spending in the hotels like the big dogs are. Those big tentpole movies, you want those, A, because they give a lot of visibility to the state and drive tourism, which is another ancillary benefit of this industry. But B, they're the ones that spend a ton of money on hotels and restaurants. You know, Avengers, one production alone, spent $5 million on hotels in Albuquerque. They essentially rented out every hotel room in Albuquerque, you know, for 2 months. So you need the mix. You need the big features. You need the independence. You need the TV. You need, you know, the music video. You need the commercial production. That's what creates a healthy overall production environment.
Once a production has finished shooting, do they do post-production in New Mexico or do they go back out of state?
Smaller productions do. If you're talking the big films, they tend to now have to go back out of state. We did have Sony ImageWorks here from 2008. They had a big facility down in Albuquerque where they did post those big movies, you know, super high-end special effects, post-production, etc. They moved out in 2012 to Vancouver. Unfortunately, again, given the instability of the uncertainty of the program going forward at that time, that's too bad. But to answer your question, most of the post is still done, the serious post is still done out of state for various reasons. Not that we couldn't do it here, but A, it tends to be a director-driven activity, meaning whoever directs the film wants to do the post where they're familiar with or where they're comfortable with. And if they've already been, if it's an out-of-state production and they've already been 3-4 months in New Mexico, they may not want to spend the next 6 months. You know, they might want to go back to LA or New York and post closer to home. Plus, they're already working on their next production, you know. So there are a lot of reasons why it's been harder. And it's a different development model. It's a cluster development model. It's easier to develop principal photography than post. But we're trying it. And the nature of post-production is changing a lot, just the technology of it and the ability to do it on the fly as well as remotely. More and more post is being done here in the state, at least the initial run-throughs.
Of course, the things that New Mexico really has to bring to the table, like our incredible landscapes and all the things you were talking about before, that doesn't really apply to post-production. That's about actually filming a show or a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Post, you need, I mentioned the cluster development model. It's the same development model as going after video games. The hubs, you need a critical mass of talent because they tend to be contract workers, piece workers that work, you know, either on a particular show or a particular aspect of a show, whether as individuals or companies, and then they'll move on to another one. And so, you really need to develop, it's almost like a Silicon Valley development model. So here's an example. When we started our incentive program, Texas jumped on pretty quickly after us. We were both at that time going after the video game industry as well as film and TV.
And this was in the early 2000s.
This was in the early 2000s. Video gaming, by the way, is like 3 or 4 times the size of TV and film in terms of production and revenue. It's a bigger industry than is the film business.
Isn't that amazing?
Right.
And it's sort of invisible to adults over a certain age because we don't necessarily play a lot of those games, but it's a whole world of people under, 30, 35 years old, whatever.
Yeah, you know, but increasingly that demographic is aging up.
So that's what I was going to say.
We were very successful in the film and TV world. Texas kind of beat us in the video gaming and post world because they developed their cluster around UT, the University of Texas in Austin, where they have a tremendous computer science program that had already attracted a lot of that kind of talent, innovation, technical capability. So again, it's a different model. So they're ahead of us at the game, no pun intended, in the video world and the post world. We're way ahead of them in the production, the principal photography game.
Very interesting. So here we are in this place that you have so eloquently described over the last half hour. What would you like to see in the coming years for the good of the film industry and the good of the state? And what is the role of the new governor in bringing the industry forward?
I think leadership from the executive, whoever it turns out being, is going to be critical, as it always is in this state. The three main things that need to be addressed, in my humble opinion, this is just my opinion, again, we need to clean out some of that backlog of accrued credits.
Meaning we have to pay our debts.
We have to pay our debts, and we're going to have to pay them anyway, but we, you know, the sooner we pay them, the quicker new production's coming in. Because if you're a new production coming in and you're looking at a $200 million backlog, just from stuff that's already happened, at $50 million a year, you're looking at waiting at least 4 years before you're even in line to get paid.
Right.
So that's going to be an issue. We got to clear out some of that. We need to increase, if not eliminate, the cap altogether. We never used to have a so-called cap.
The cap came in. That was something that...
That was in 2011, along with increasing the complexity of the program overall.
And that was something that Martinez wanted.
Yeah, it was... Martinez and quite frankly, some cohorts, including some Democrats in the legislature, that's a different story for a different show. So increase or eliminate the cap. If it's a pay-as-you-go break-even program, you don't need a cap. It doesn't matter if you're doing $10 million or $1 billion in production a year. If it doesn't have any effect on the general fund, it doesn't matter. But whatever, let's just say for politics, they still feel they need to keep a cap on there, at least double it to $100 million. And then re-simplify the program. Again, we have what is now widely acknowledged, what went from being widely acknowledged as the most elegant, accessible incentive program to now what is widely regarded as by far the most complex, arcane, inscrutable program in the United States. So that can be kind of an issue. But the good news is, all of this can be done. You know, if now you ask, what's the role of the next governor coming in? If there's vision and leadership, all of this can be addressed.
Is this considered a clean industry? Do they really clean up after themselves?
Yeah. It's just standard contractual terms that you've got to leave any site, whether it's land, buildings, public, private, whatever, in at least the condition you found it, if not better. If you're talking about cleaning up after itself. As far as it being a clean industry overall, New Mexico, we started in 2006, I believe, the first, and I still believe, only green filmmaking program in the country, where we encourage the use of, we mentioned, you know, biofuels, renewable and alternative energy, things like low volatility paints, recycled construction materials for set construction, et cetera, down, you know, trash recycling, you know, pretty kind of common sense things, but we actually put it together into a program that we encourage productions to follow.
Eric Witt is executive director of the Santa Fe Film Office. They're on the web at sffo.film. In a nutshell, what do you guys do here in Santa Fe?
As opposed to, say, the State Film Office, we get that question a lot. What's the difference between the two? We actually handle all day-to-day production activity of film and television that comes to the entire Santa Fe region, so throughout Santa Fe County.
So really nuts and bolts kind of stuff.
The nuts and bolts day-to-day that the State Film Office doesn't have the charge nor the resources to handle, right? So we're the initial point of contact for productions.
So that day that I went to the dog park and I couldn't go in because they were filming, was you.
Yes, and you would call me to yell at me like you always do.
That was great. I was happy. Like, they're filming a show at the dog park, which is such a beautiful place.
Yes, I think that was Only the Brave was the show that was up there at the time.
Eric Witt, Executive Director of the Santa Fe Film Office, sffo.film. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe.
This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.